Yes, indeed. Blair Kirkhoff brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. They're at I-35 and Santa Fe. Find them at 1500 East Santa Fe. If you want to GPS it, that is where you will find the number one Buick dealership, the number one volume GM dealer in the metro. It's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Great, great folks. I bought my last five vehicles. Is it five? Let's see. One, two. I think it's five vehicles there and counting. Maybe it's six. I can't remember where I'm at. I forgot. I haven't said that for a while. I got to count it up. But it's where I'll buy my next one. I can tell you that for sure. It's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. 2004 GMC Envoy, the first vehicle I bought at Brogdon. In fact, I was a customer before they were a sponsor, but proud to have them as a sponsor here. Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe. Check them out online at robertbrogdon.com. Check out the 2021 GMC Yukon. They got a great selection of those already at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Mr. Kirkhoff, sir, how are you?
Doing swell. Hope you are too.
Yes, doing very good. And let's start with the news of the day that I know you have been covering. Were you out? Were you on the Zoom with Alex Gordon?
No, I didn't get to do that. I was busy, had something else going on at the time, so I didn't get to hear the Gordon. I'm going to go back and listen to it tonight, though. Would love to have heard it. And his team, and then teammates, I guess, were going to go at three. Was that it? And there seemed to be a succession. There was Gordon and then Matheny and then players after that. And I didn't get a chance to do those.
I know you're asking questions about it on the Chiefs Zoom. A lot of Zooms today. It's been a very zoomy
day. Zoomy day. Yep.
Very
zoomy
day.
Week.
What do you make of Alex Gordon's career when it's all said and done? How would you describe it? What would you, you know, is there a, besides the obvious, the home run against the Mets, that was titanic? Is there a, any story that jumps out at you about it?
Well, you're right. I mean, the cool thing is, if he had had this career without that moment, it would still have been a, you know, a wonderful career worthy of the Royals Hall of Fame and all the nice things that are being said about him today. But he had that, and he had the moment. Which makes him, you know, it's an immortal moment. It's one of the Brett home run off of Gossage in '80, the two biggest home runs in Royals history. So it might be the difference between a nice career and a career that might end up with a statue at the K. So he does have that, and just the idea of the position switch. I know so much has been made about that, and especially at the time when it happened. I don't know if I should say this because I didn't look it up, but I can't remember if it's right. But I remember covering one of the Royals, the final game of a season. And I don't remember which season it was, but Gordon was playing third base, and he took a ball in the face, and it put a big cut on his either lip or mouth or somewhere. And I just thought, man, it's going to be hard. But I think it was established that he wasn't going to be playing third base after that. And I remember thinking, boy, he's going to be glad to get away from here. Look, he's played left field defensively as well as that position could be played, and that's what, you know, all the nice things that are being said about him today through social media and everywhere else are deserved. And he defines what the Royals have been, right? They were a 100-loss team when he got there. They were a World Series champion at the height of his career, maybe in the second half, and now they're back to being a 100-loss team. And for better and for worse, he was always Royal.
The thing that stood out to me was from a guy who went from being the most maligned athlete maybe in Kansas City history to being a beloved, iconic figure. I think it's one of the great stories to hear him sitting there. What struck me today, to hear him sitting there talking about how great the town was. He said the media was great to him. He said he always tried to be great to the media. But, you know, talking about the fans, you know, he was public enemy number one for about 2 years in his career. I even remember the year he finally broke out, I went to spring training, and I talked to him every year since, you know, they had started bringing him into the big league clubhouse and you could put him on there. And I'd talk to him, you know, after games and before games, and we'd bring him on as a guest. And I remember that year I just said, you know, I was out there with Doug then, and Doug and I were talking about it, and I'm like, you know, dude, let's just give him a break. Like, he doesn't need to – like, what question are we going to ask him, and what does he need to say? Like, we see him out here. We know how hard he works. He works harder than anybody else. let's just, we don't need to have a segment with him and then, you guys sucks. Yeah, you know, they should have taken this guy, that guy. I remember that's where it was. I pitied where he was in this town.
Well, and
to go from there to, like, now he's retiring. He's a lock for the Royals Hall of Fame, 7 gold gloves, 3 all-stars. His story for me is, you know, just the beauty of sports. It's the movie that we don't know what the ending is going to be. And you sure as hell, off the first 30 minutes of that movie, had no idea where this thing was going to end.
Oh, heck no. And you remember how the Royals promoted him when he got here. Mm-hmm. You know, he and Brett were in the commercials together, and you know, Brett was, you know, one of those spots. Brett was, you know, basically saying, "All right, now it's your turn, kid." Basically, something like that. And when you promise George Brett, and you get a guy who was striking out as often as he was, failing at the plate as often as he was those first few years, yeah, you can understand where the reaction came from, where it was coming from. The post seasons that he had. Look, his postseason batting average was his career, like, for the two series, is like in the 220s, 230s. But that guy had, I can remember the big at bats that he had. You know, the base hit off of David Price in the second game of the ALCS in 15. The go ahead run in game 4 of the ground out to second. That brought in the go-ahead run in ALDS in 15, the home run in Baltimore that put him ahead in the ALCS in game 1 of 14, you had a big triple against the Angels. He just seemed to come up big in big moments. And that, again, the diving catch in Chicago, that was what an unbelievable moment that was. And the I'll never forget, in 14, in August of 14, the Royals, you know, they hadn't made any. It's still the pennant drive, and he hits a 2-run homer in the bottom of the ninth off of a really good, I can't remember the closer for the Twins, lefty closer for the Twins who was really good, and wins the game. And there were only like 15,000 people at the K, even though it's a pennant race. And I just remember thinking that time, this guy is nails. He is nails. And
Eddie Guardado?
No, it wasn't Guardado, he was an all-star. He was an all-star close, and I can't remember his name.
What year?
14.
Okay, I'll look it up.
It was August. I looked up the date too. It was like August 26th or 27th. They won 2-1. The other thing, Soren, I think it's kind of important. Hadn't you been thinking a little bit about, okay, is this going to be it for him? Is he going to try to come back and get squeezed one more year? We obviously know he's in the best shape of, you know, for a guy his age that you can humanly be. And I wondered if he was going to, you know, maybe chase a few milestones and try to get 200 career home runs. And I really applaud him for kind of realizing that it's, you know, this is the end, and he wants to, you know, he wants to leave. Well, you know, he's not going to have a full season to, you know, block the path of a prospect, or, you know, just kind of get on with the future of the organization.
By the way, Glenn Perkins, is that
Glenn
who you're
Perkins?
Thinking of?
Thank you very much.
Interesting story about that one. It just came to me because I got a text. What I love is I got a text from Ryan LaFever that said Glenn Perkins. So thanks. Thanks for listening, Ryan. And then right after that, I realized that Ryan didn't just text me. He texted me and Curtis, but Curtis then texts me and tries and goes, Glenn Perkins. I texted him. I got the same text. A-hole.
Ryan did not text me. I looked it up.
Oh, really?
I had Gordon's page up. So I looked it up on the scores, schedule thing from 2000.
I was like, you dirty dog, Siebold. Try to say, LaFever just texted me the same thing. Right.
I like Sloan's story better. Let's go.
Yeah, my story is,
let's go with it.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
The legend becomes fact. You print the legend.
And that's right.
Here we talk about him.
Ryan said
out of nowhere. Go ahead.
No, I was just real quick. He just texted me. He said, "Yeah, University of Minnesota guy." So he's a Gopher.
There you go.
That's why Ryan's
when
got even more.
He came out of spring training in like 2000. I guess it was 2011. He said, "I'm gonna dominate." He used the word dominate. I remember it was almost universal.
No, it wasn't spring training.
That it was comp. Wasn't spring training?
No, he said it at the end of the year before he took off.
So end of 2010. But I remember it was like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's my recollection. Now, somebody correct me if they remember it the way Curtis did. My recollection was he said that at the end of the year, and it was like that speaks to even, you know, and maybe he was, you know, starting to put it together. You know, I remember talking to Seitzer, and Seitzer saying, listen, you're going to have to sell out, and you're going to have to, like, just we're going to start over. And that's what he did. And turned everything around in how he hit. And yeah, I think it's remarkable. And I remember, do you remember when he was drafted, number two?
I do. I remember I was covering him at the College World Series that year. And
he got thrown out of like the game. I think they got eliminated in, didn't he?
I don't remember. It's funny. I don't remember that. I do remember that
he got thrown out. He got thrown out because he looked over at the ref looked over at the ump. And, like, there was a questionable call, and he just kind of looked over. Or he said something to a teammate. They threw him out. It was, like, a really super, like, the broadcast crew was like, what? You just threw out the top player in college baseball over that? Like, it was, like, this real – maybe it wasn't the final game. Maybe they didn't get bounced. Maybe he came back and played another game. But I do know he got thrown out. And that's a great trivia question. We should look that up if that was his final college game that he got ejected from. But I remember him just kind of shaking his head. But, you know, I remember talking to Allard Baird, who was the general manager that drafted him. And I said, well, what are you going to do? Upton's going to go one. And Upton was supposed to be, you know, bordering on A-Rod type of ability, which he may still have the ability, just doesn't put in the work ethic. You know, but Upton was going number one. I said, well, where are you going with number two? And the consensus was that it was going to be Alex Gordon. That's where everybody was like, Gordon, top player in college baseball, that's number two. He goes, there are three third basemen I'm looking at. He goes, one, I think is the best hitter, but I don't think he can stay on third. He said, one, I think is the best third baseman, but I think he's probably the third best hitter. And then one is probably second in both. And so who do you think out of Ryan Braun, Alex Gordon, and Ryan Zimmerman, each guy was?
That's a good question.
I always remember this. We have, all of us, have been very fortunate to be able to cover Dayton Moore and before him, Allard Baird. They're two of the classiest guys I've ever had the pleasure of covering. He said Ryan Braun was going to be the best bat, but he goes, I don't think he's not going to stay on third. And it wasn't very long before the Brewers had him out in the outfield. He said Ryan Zimmerman is the best glove, but the bat is, he said, I don't think he's going to have the bat that the other two are. And he said Gordon's probably second best at both of them.
Interesting.
And in reality, Gordon, I mean, I'm looking here at the draft, so.
What how top heavy was that third base class for colleges?
How about that?
Oh my,
no
top
kidding.
Five, three of the top five? Oh my God.
Even if two of them ended up being outfielders.
Right.
One
right.
was a three-time All-Star with seven gold gloves, Alex Gordon. Ryan Braun, I'd have to look up what his All-Stars and appearances, and I know he had the steroids, the positive test, but he had 351 home runs. Ryan Zimmerman, I think, ended up being a better hitter than probably Baird thought he was going to be. 270 home runs. From Ryan Zimmerman, and then 190 from Alex Gordon. What's that?
Well, and then, you know, I know we're getting off the position here, but I guess I didn't remember how good that draft was. Incredible.
How about all three third basemen ended up being better than by WAR than Justin Upton?
Yeah.
If you rank that draft by WAR, it goes Ryan Braun at 46.8. Andrew McCutchen, who went 11 at 44.6.
Was an MVP.
Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, Tulo's in there.
Who went 7 at 44.5. Ryan Zimmerman, who went 4 at 38.5. Alex Gordon, 34.7. And Justin Upton is 6th at 33.8.
How about that? Wow.
And Jacoby Ellsbury at 31.
Later in the first round.
Yeah, he went 23. There's seven guys with WARs over 30 that came out of that draft class. So, the Royals did just fine on that pick. It took a little while to get going, but once he settled in where he needed to go, it was, you know, a cornerstone of a championship team.
Yeah.
So.
And what and you know, a fan favorite after the, you know, the little bit of the, you know, when are we finally going to win? Because what part of that too was that that Wichita team in 06 had done so well, right? The team that Frank White managed. And Billy on that team, Butler. So they were dominating. And
was it Butler, Gordon, and was it the Australian kid? Was he the third guy that was kind of touted as the core? Justin Huber?
Oh gosh, well that's
I
a better memory.
Were the, they were just big time hitters down there on that team. I you know, just one more thing, and then we'll take a break and go in a different direction, but. I can't stress enough how I don't think people remember how negative it was around him.
No, it was the team, and but he was the face of the team because the Royals had made him the face of the team at that point. You know, he was going to come up and save things, and he was not. It didn't happen for him those first few years.
Our buddy Jim Curtis texted me. He said, "Wasn't Johnny Damon the guy on those George Brett ads? They both were. They did that twice. They did it with Damon." And then, you know, kind of like, here's right. the old guard to the new guy. And then they did it with Alex Gordon as well. And so that's a lot of pressure. I think the organization may have learned from that.
I hope so. I really do hope so.
You know, I haven't seen the Bobby Witt Jr. and George Brett ad yet. Have you?
No. Good point. So who's left from 15? It's Duffy, Salvi.
And that's it, isn't it?
And Greg Holland's back, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And Modesty got an at-bat in the World Series, so I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. 5 years later. 5 years later. Yeah. Holy cow. That is amazing. I mean, I knew we were down to just a few, but now you verbalize it. Like, and who knows? Duffy's going into the last year of his deal.
Yeah.
Salvi could be traded. I mean, they're not planning. I don't think they're going to trade either one of them. But I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility if they'd go, you know what, we're further away than we thought, and Salvi's, I don't know that he's going to be behind the dish, then we got to move him. So,
yeah,
amazing. Blair Kirchhoff is with us, the great Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star. We'll take a break. Want to hit on something interesting that happened in the Chiefs Zoom today, which I have forgotten to tweet out, which I'll do here in a minute. And then we'll talk some college football as we finally got a big college football slate. More with Blair Kirchhoff. He's brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. You can see them online at robertbrogdon.com. You can see Curtis Siebold at Hen House right now, for crying out loud. Go down there, get stocked up for the weekend. My go-to spot where, I don't know, I can only imagine how much time my family spends in the Hen House, from the delicatessen, the bakery. They got you covered front to back, and of course back at the meat counter. Great specials like seafood, catfish fillets, $7.99 a pound, easy peel brown shrimp, $9.99 a pound. You want some salmon? They're fresh Atlantic salmon fillets. My wife's got numerous recipes that she could tell you. $7.99 a pound for those great salmon fillets. We love them here in our house. And even wild halibut fillets right now, $18.99 a pound. Get it at your neighborhood Hen House.
The good sense, end of the hour answer. Alex Gordon, one of two Royals to wear the number 4 in an All-Star game. I asked who the other one was, and Saran, you got it immediately.
Danny Tartable.
Yep. His last of his 5 years with the Royals, 1991. He wore the number 4 in the All-Star game at Toronto, and then went to the Yankees.
If I had a vision for what I wanted to look like as a professional baseball player, it was Danny Tartable.
Dude, he had it, man.
When I was a kid, like the gun show with the sleeves rolled
yes.
up to make sure you saw the gun show. Were you a Tartable?
I was.
Guy?
I absolutely was. Wasn't the outfield once Bo Jackson, Danny Tartable, and Jim Eisenreich? Doesn't it seem about right, 89, 90-ish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a bad outfield right there. Hitting outfield.
I look, first of all, his name was Tartable, and his nickname was the Bull.
Yes.
And, you know, he had the guns out there, and, oh, I love Danny Tartable. Loved him. Hated his ass when he went to the Yankees.
Yeah. Try these numbers for his last year, his one All-Star year in KC 91. Nice little slash line, 316, 397, a league-leading 593 slug for a 990 OPS, 31 bombs, 100 RBIs, 35 doubles. Not bad.
Oh, gosh.
Oh. I mean, by the way, and that was when the ball wasn't juiced. He wasn't juiced, and Kaufman was huge. So, he was a tremendous
5 years in KC, three 100 RBI seasons. They traded him from Seattle for Scott Bankhead.
Oof.
No, they got him from Seattle for Scott Bankhead.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, got him from Seattle for Scott Bankhead.
Then he went to the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
went to the Yankees in free agency for the biggest contract in baseball. And had a couple of good years and then fell off. You know, I don't know how he did with his money. I never cover Danny Tartable, so I don't know what – he might have been a royal ass, or he might have been the greatest guy ever. I don't know. But I do know that he – I know the story because, when he went to the Yankees, I was at Syracuse, so I was surrounded by Yankee fans, and they were all laughing at me and everything. And, you know, I punched as many as I could, just for the record. that's not true. That's a joke. But I did not like it that I was that had to be around Yankee fans, and they had Tartable. But he started a house. And we Googled this once, Curtis, and we confirmed this. He started a house. Like, his contract was, like, $25 million or $30 million. He started building, and I don't think he ever completed a $25 million house, like back then. And, like, I was like, what? He had a train, like Silver Spoons.
Mills.
Remember the TV show Silver Spoons? He was building a train to go through the house. I mean, I was like, what?
Yeah.
But
none of us are old enough to remember his dad.
Yeah, here it is. Here.
Danny Jose Tartable played for the A's.
Here's a story on the house from the LA Times back then. 11-bedroom, 27,000-square-foot home designed that is expected to be worth $30 million when completed on some property that they own next to singer Janet Jackson's house in Rancho Santa Fe Farms. That's $30 million in 1993.
I mean, I don't think it ever got done. I mean, I think it's kind of sad. I think it did bankrupt him, you know, trying to build a house. So, anyway, sidebar there. Blair, did you notice who was on the Chiefs Zoom today?
Somebody sent me a text just before you asked a question that gave it away. But I didn't notice when I jumped on the Zoom call. And then when I got the text, I said, well, that's kind of interesting. And I wonder if that's right. And then you mentioned that, that yes, indeed. There was a guest.
I wanted to ask the question
on the Zoom call.
Yeah. I wanted to ask the question about quarterback runs. Notice who was on the Chiefs Zoom today. Bottom row. I hope it doesn't get cut off when I tweet this, but we'll see. Mike Vick. Mike V is what it said on the screen. It's on that picture. If that whole picture goes on that, you can at Seren Petro on Twitter. We're just going along, and he was there for Reed, and I'm like, it's Mike Vick. Right? Like, what is Mike? And I'm like, okay, they must be gonna say something or do something, or he's gonna come on. And I was like, okay. And he didn't do anything with Reed, and Reed didn't mention him being on there. And so I had wanted to talk about the quarterback runs because I'm very curious as to how much, you know, does Reed have a section of the play sheet that is for, you know, deep routes to create run room for his quarterback, right?
Right,
because
right.
I know he does something to do it. I would love to sit in those meetings and find out if it's like, okay, this one is one read, read two is take off. Right, because I've cleared the field. They're going to be in man. If you read man, read one is this. If it's open, if not, boom, take off running. Because they're all going to have their backs to you, and you got a chance to go. And I wonder how much of that third and 20 was a designed play where the run was a big part of what Andy Reid had designed there. And so I wanted to ask that to Andy Reid, and I asked about the – because I think it is of no – I was hoping to get a second question in with Reed. It didn't end up happening, but wanted to ask him about the design. So I asked Mahomes about it. I'm like, Mike Vick's right there. Like, we've been talking about quarterback running. That had been one of the things
right.
that had been there. And here it is. Drake, give me, what number is it? Give me five. Give me number five. Curtis kept the question in here. So you'll hear how it's not well crafted. I actually, I know why you left it in there, Curtis, but this is not my shining moment. Notice the poor execution of a question that I barfed out eventually about quarterback runs to Patrick Mahomes.
How does it feel for the first time on one of these Zooms to not be the best athlete on the Zoom? If I'm not mistaken, the guy I see down at the bottom was one hell of a runner. And that was my question about running quarterback style. Coach Reed was talking about, you know, the run being a part of, you know, what quarterbacks do in this offense. How much of that is like a design? Like, is there like a, for lack of a better term, an escape hatch, that there are some plays that routes are designed, one, to get you the ball down the field, but if they're not there to create those openings like you had on the big 20-yard scramble?
Yeah, I think the good thing about having the guys that I have on my team, the receivers, running backs, tight ends that we have, is that defenses have to be accountable for those guys. And so they're getting depth. They're trying to stop those guys from beating them over the top. And whenever there's room to run, I have to be able to take advantage of it. And it's kind of been the last 3 years of – usually when I scramble, I'm looking downfield to throw. So you're seeing defenses now, they're not leaving their guy. They're kind of just staying on them and letting me run. And I don't know if I can run like Mike, but – I can run a little bit, enough just to get the first down and get out of bounds.
In my defense, I was wanting to really check out Vic's reaction to when I called out that it was Mike Vick there, because I was so pleased. And I was, I don't know, did I say 99% in there? Because in my head, I was, that was part of what I was going to say in the question.
Yeah.
I'm 99% sure the guy below.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, horrible question. Horribly executed question.
No, I mean, you had a little bit of an ad lib. You had, you know, you adjusted on the fly. You made an adjustment. It was good.
It was brutal. And, you know, I got a chance to interview Mike Vick at the Super Bowl. I mean, I know he's been through a lot and some people will never forgive him, but by all accounts, he's turned his life around. He's like really, really as like, just like, you know, financially, you know, he was financially ruined and he's turned that around. And by all accounts, and I'm going to tell you, there wasn't a nicer guy to talk to.
Yeah,
Mike Vick.
I remember, you know, he was at training camp one year. Remember, he was he was on the I don't know what volunteer or, but he was up at St. Joe
coaching intern,
right? And I don't think he held court. I think we were asking to speak with him.
Yeah, they didn't bring him.
Didn't make him available to us. But I remember watching him the whole time, and he just seemed genuinely interested in. You know, in what everybody was doing and maybe, you know, becoming a coach. Maybe that, I don't, what was today about? Did you ever, I guess we never found
I
out
don't
what
know.
He was doing.
No, I don't know. Unless, you know, I think Coach Reed stays in touch with all his guys and, you know, maybe he's like, listen, I know you kind of scratched the coach bug. If you ever want in, here it is. Or you want, you know, and maybe it's just like, hey, they send all the information out to him. He's like, I'm going to check out this Patrick Mahomes. You know, maybe he gets sent all the stuff that we get sent, and he's like, I'm going to check it out. I noticed that once we got to, like, Mitchell Schwartz or somebody, he either left or he turned his video off. Mm-hmm. And we're all logging stuff, so I didn't have time to go look on, right, see if he was still on there or not. But I thought it was kind of a cool moment. Here's Mike Vick.
Yeah.
I want to ask Patrick Mahomes about running, and one of either the best or maybe he's number two behind Lamar Jackson. I know Lamar Jackson broke his record, but, you know, one of the two or three best, he and Randall Cunningham and Lamar Jackson, the best, best running quarterbacks of all time. And I'm going to ask Patrick Mahomes a running question. I was just like, this is a cool moment. Like, there, sometimes our job, everybody's job sucks, right? Sometimes. But I'm like, I'm not forgetting that one. That's a cool moment.
And he folded it into the answer, too. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We knew Mahomes.
And Vic just kind of gave you kind of a wry smile, like, yeah, I know you saw me. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah, and your name's at the bottom, too. So.
Yeah. Mike V. It just said Mike V.
You're right. It did say Mike V.
Yes. But. Hence, I was 99%. Could have been right. Mike Valley. Could have been, you know.
Jose Valentin, right?
Star's got a new beat guy Blair didn't tell me about. I don't know what's going on here. And then I'm, you know, busted, like, oh, yeah. You know, get the well, never mind. Whatever. I can't decide if it'd be funny or if people get pissed. So,
but I'll tell you what, the subject you were pursuing, I think, is pretty interesting. And that game Mahomes' performance in that game. And that third and 20 was, he knew exactly where he needed to go, knew exactly when he had to get down, right, to avoid contact. And what a demoralizing play that is for the defense, right? Third and 20 and your quarterback, you know, who's not Lamar Jackson, is scrambling for 20 to pick that up. It reminded me a little bit of some of the plays he had to make against Detroit last year. You remember that? And even though the Lions went on to a poor season, they were playing pretty well at the time. And the Chiefs are kind of lucky to get out of there with a win. And I just remember, I don't have the totals in front of me, but I imagine I wouldn't be surprised if Mahomes was the leading rusher for the Chiefs in that game as well, because he had to do a lot of that. And that's right. That's all about, you know, teams are trying to, you know, they got to account for all these weapons that the Chiefs have, and they have to double up a couple of them. And you start counting helmets, and you know the one guy you don't account for is Mahomes running, or the one thing you don't account for is Mahomes running, and he could beat you with it.
Yeah, and you know, I think even the touchdown catch of Tyreek Hill, you see kind of the safeties, how they're so torn. You know, Tyreek Hill running under that pass and the incredible throw from Patrick Mahomes. That play, by the way, it got a lot of hype on Sunday SportsCenter, but it's better than people realize. I mean, it is an incredible play all around by the talents of those guys being able to do it. But you watch the safety does, I think, a complete 360. Because at first he wants to go help on Travis Kelce coming across. And we talked about this with Eric Eager, and Eager was talking about how he discussed with people how in different situations how they like to run Kelce clear across, and he draws a lot of attention. I'm like, how do you forget about Tyreek Hill over the top and the safety? It's because Kelsey's so deadly underneath,
right?
The safety starts to go there, and he's like, oh damn it, I got to get back out of here, and Tyreek Hill lays out and makes the play. It was a great play, but I think all of that, like, they're so preoccupied by those receivers that when it does open up, he's got running lanes. And I wonder if in that game, and, you know, last week they didn't get the all 22 out till I don't know when. They got it out on time this week. And I've looked at all, like, the scoring plays and different stuff like that. But I want to go back and try to see, you know, if those running lanes were there in the first half and he just wasn't taking it.
Right, right. And, well, that could explain some things. The sluggishness of that offense in the first half.
Or is it like Reed went, oh, I'm going down to this part of the play sheet. We're going to open this up. Okay, Gus Bradley wants to take away everything over the top. Then we're going to start gashing him with Patrick running. It was a rock fight of a game.
It was. Right? And just like the games against the Chargers have been the last couple of years. I mean, that game in Mexico City was that way. And I just remember feeling going into the game. I was hearing predictions and Chiefs, and, you know, winning in the, you know, 30 to 20 something. I didn't think there was going to be that high scoring. And however, I feel a little differently about Monday night. I do think we're going to see some points on the board in that one. I haven't seen the over under, but I think it's going to take more than 30 to win Chiefs Ravens, and I wouldn't be surprised if both teams got there.
Yeah, I think so as well. We'll take a break. More with Blair Kirkhoff. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 and Santa Fe. It is a great place to go buy a vehicle. It's a great time to buy a vehicle. They got great discounts right now on the 2020s and the 21s coming in. Get to Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe. We're talking to Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star, as we are wanting to do. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Blair, let me ask you this. One game, if you could only watch one of the three locals, what's the game that intrigues you the most?
Well, it's got to be Missouri, just because we haven't seen him yet.
That's right.
So Missouri-Bama, and I think I'm going to head over there and watch that. So I'm eager to see the, you know, just how, what's the line on that? Have you guys
27 and a half.
Oof.
I took the Tigers and the points today. Probably just because I'm a Drinkwitz fanboy
now. So can they? I guess the question is, you know, well, so many questions, right? Sean Robinson, if he's the guy, hasn't played since, you know, so the middle of 2018. Can Missouri slow the game down? Can they be physical enough with Alabama? First game's always a decent time to, you know, to look for an upset, but not an upset, but just a different, you know, just something weird. So that's the one I'm really kind of eyeballing, but I'm obviously, you know, K-State, Oklahoma. I do expect Kansas State to feel better about itself when, you know, against Oklahoma. I think they got a couple weeks to get healthier and look at their mistakes from the first game. And same is true with Kansas, I guess. But
a couple things. If a 5-7 team from last year beats a 10-2 team that doesn't have the quarterback that they had last year, that's not unheard of.
No, it's not. There's so much back though for Alabama. There's a ton back.
There is, and that's a big part of it. Oh, listen, I think Alabama's going to win, but I think Drinkwitz. Yeah, where Alabama should have a pretty good idea of what Drinkwitz wants to do because of his ties to Auburn.
Yeah, the SEC
it should be
ties,
pointed
for
out.
Sure.
Yeah, it should be pointed out. It's one of the reasons why I don't ever understand why Auburn is talking about changing coaches. Nobody. And you can say, oh, well, it's a rivalry game, and you got to throw out the record. Shut up. That's all crap. That's what people say on broadcasts. It's not reality. The real deal is that he knows how to beat Nick Saban, and he causes more problems than anybody for Nick Saban. And it's one of the reasons why – why am I drawing a blank? What's the Auburn coach's name?
Gus.
Gus Malzahn, yeah. Malzahn, he gets it. Like, he's a really good football coach. And if Auburn ever gets rid of him, I'm going to be like, listen, you need to know who you are.
Yeah, they've been to a national championship game with him. So
yes, and he's beaten and he beats Alabama.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's something. That's this is the best edition Alabama's ever had. That Nick Saban's better than Bear Bryant. So you're facing the best edition ever of Alabama, and he beats them, and you're the little brother. Okay, so just deal with this. This guy's really good. And Drinkwitz studied under him. And I thought it was a great point by Will Harris yesterday. Said, you're talking about a guy that comes from the Auburn tree, the Malzahn tree, and the Boise tree. He's like, those are a couple of pretty good combinations to put together. Like, if you want to say, like, what could be the best, you know, place to study to be the Missouri coach and be successful? How about the program that's the little brother to Alabama but still beats them? And how about the most dominant program of the non-Power Fives? Like, I think that's the best recipe, isn't it?
That's good. And again, I go back to this. When he was at North Carolina State, how good the offense was when he was the coordinator under Dave Doran. And then the year he went to Appalachian State, the NC State offense went into the tank. I mean, he makes a difference. Makes a difference as a play caller, as a play designer. He just knows offense. And I'd love to see Missouri move the ball on Alabama. I think that would be an encouraging sign. Alabama's supposed to have a great defense. Love to see Missouri put up some yards, get the ball in the end zone a couple times, and just take their chances on defense. I would keep it competitive into the second half. That's what I'm. And listen, above all, we're going to get football back at Columbia. You know, there's going to be. I think they're going to cap it at 11-5, something like that. So there'll be some fans in the stands. Night game supposed to be a nice night. So I'm really looking forward to seeing football back with the Tigers.
I am too.
And as you said, Drinkwitz. I mean, that's really eager to see what he's about, and see if the 1 year of head coaching success at that level, can it translate to SEC play?
And by the way, I know you do everything, so I'm not trying to. If I call out the second Zoom that you weren't on, I apologize. you weren't on the Drinkwitz last Zoom, were you?
No, I was not. Go ahead.
I know they were talking about all the, the star guys. One of your guys down there was going to pick up all your passes and everything.
Yeah.
But it's funny how he was kind of dialing in, how he got a little more serious, a little more abrupt in his answers. And he was standing at a podium as opposed to kind of leaning on his elbow.
That's interesting.
It was funny how it was kind of like game time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, no, I'm really excited for the Missouri game. I just want to see how they do. And listen, if they get blown out, they're supposed to get blown out. So it doesn't mean it's over. But, man, if he gives them a fight of any kind, I think Missouri fans are going to go through the roof. So it'll be a lot of fun. Blair, always fun talking to you, buddy. We appreciate it. We will talk to you again next week, my friend.
All right, Seren.
All right, Hall of Famer Joe Green, 74 today, one of two North Texas products to be named to at least five Pro Bowls. Who's the other? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.